Welcome to the Lister Health Talks podcast, hosted by Lieutenant Colonel Garrett Holt, the commander of Lister Army Health Clinic and the health services director at Fort Novosel. Each month, listen in as the team focuses their discussion on relevant, relatable health content that empowers your health and the readiness of the force. Today's show is very special. Lieutenant Colonel Garrett Holt is joined by Brigadier General Lance Rainey, the Commanding General Medical Readiness Command East, and the Director Defense Health Network East, to discuss ways to find balance and build healthy habits.
Well, hello, Fort Novosel. This is Lieutenant Colonel Garrett Holt here, the commander for Lister Army Health Clinic and the host for the Lister Health Talks podcast. Welcome you again to the next episode. I'm really honored to have our guest today. While not assigned to Lister Army Health Clinic by document, he is certainly part of the Lister family. I want to welcome Brigadier General Lance Rainey. He's the commanding general for Medical Readiness Command East and the director for the Defense Health Network East. He's also a board-certified family medicine physician. Sir, I want to welcome you to the show. You know, we're bringing in Brigadier General Rainey on because he has a wealth of experience in all kinds of leadership positions, challenging positions, both here at home station as well as abroad and defending our nation. And we thought you'd be able to bring us, sir, a lot of insight into what it means to promote your own health and to bring balance and really to have a clear perspective on how it means to be a healthy, ready leader. Sir, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Garrett. It's great to be here.
Yes, sir. Well, I thought, you know, we were kind of tossing it around a little bit with the team. We're like, wow, he's coming down to visit. Maybe we bring him in. Because who is better to talk about balance and building a lot of good structure in your life with health than someone who certainly you don't get born a general officer. It takes a lot of work, a lot of hard jobs, and throughout the years to get to where you're at. And certainly this is no break, I'm sure, for you. So I'm interested to hear, sir, as we're digging into it, you know, what have you done through the years or even in your current job? How does a leader find balance and health? I mean, what are some tips and tricks that you've done?
So balance and health, and I'll mention more about balance later, primarily the work-life balance. We'll talk about that later.
But sure.
Kind of balance in life, I think first and foremost, you got to be comfortable with who you are and what you're doing. To stay healthy and to stay outside of stress, and there are tons of studies out there that link increased levels of stress to shorten lifespans. There was one even a few weeks ago that looked at increased stress actually contributing to higher levels of just whole body inflammation.
Number, oh, wow.
You know, all kinds of stuff. But to find balance in the everyday life and to avoid that stress, you got to understand what stress is and what is stressing you. Because I think of stress, at least in my life anyway, as a self-inflicted injury. Stress is something I feel.
Sure.
And I emphasize the I. No one makes me feel the way I feel.
Sure.
So to a certain degree, that is self-inflicted. So why is that? When I get stressed, it's usually because I know there's something I need to do, but I don't have the resources to do it. Now, those resources, they can be time, they can be money, and this can be in life, this can be at work, this can be related to specific tasks, but usually it's related to I have defined an expectation that either I need to achieve or I need to ensure that the team achieves and I can't get there or I'm concerned about getting there. So if I'm concerned about getting there and I'm stressing about the future, obviously the key there is to have a plan. You know, it's to understand truly what the issue is at hand and truly where you need to be and whatever the resolution is.
Right.
And then a plan to get there.
Right.
And a realistic plan to get there. And if you can do that, then stress is a bit better controlled.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot about clarity of perspective. I think back to my younger years as a second lieutenant, and like I would get so stressed about things, like you said. I was making things up in my mind, and I was definitely, as a second lieutenant, a lot more under-resourced than I think I really realized I was, and probably a lot with understanding and experience from that piece as well. But that prevented me from having a clear perspective.
Yeah, and stress is so prevalent. It's interesting. As I look at our commander surveys, so the DEOCs that we do as commanders, you know, a lot of people identify their specific questions that say, hey, are you not stressed, mildly stressed, moderately stressed, highly stressed, et cetera. And if I look in general across our commands, stress is anywhere from rated moderate to high from 45% of our population all the way up to 75%. When we think about why that is, and we look at some of the challenges we face right now in healthcare, mm-hmm. specifically in military healthcare and our ability to keep up with the demand, mm-hmm. it makes sense. You know, I think everybody comes to work in a clinic or a hospital every day with the expectation that they're going to be able to do what they want to do and make people better. They're going to be able to do what needs to be done in terms of access. If people need to be seen, we're going to take care of them. And we're challenged right now with resources. Now, we're moving in the right direction, but I've been in places in the past where we didn't have the resources, but then we got to where we did, but people were still stressed because they became skewed by that sense of I'm unable to do what I need to do. It took a while to get us beyond that sense of stress and recognize, hey, we do have the resources now. And let's step back and instead of seeing what and defining the expectation as it was 6 months ago, let's look at it anew and how we are now. And then sometimes you get there.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And then it actually, coming out of COVID-19, I think a lot of the national data from healthcare would say that we were all burnt out, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there was a term, and I think a lot of it has a corollary there, and really, if a Venn diagram, a lot of overlap. But is there ever been a time in your life where you actually, like, you felt burnt out, and what did you do to kind of come out of that or work through that?
So let's kind of define burnt out first. I think burnout starts as stress.
Okay.
And then eventually it leads to a point where the purpose you found in what you do every day is gone. It disappears. And we see that often in healthcare. Healthcare is full of purpose. I mean, you have the opportunity to influence positively people's lives on a daily basis. Simple things that we do in healthcare can be life-changing for many of those that we take care of. Huge purpose. And purpose functionally is what gets us out of bed in the morning.
Right.
Right. It's why we get up and go do what we want to do. So stress, and then as you lose the purpose that you might have once found, then you're at the burnout. You don't want to get up anymore and go do what you used to do. So how do you get out? Have I ever been that way? No. Just to be honest, family practice, as you described it, is what I do. That's what I've wanted to do the majority of my life. And even in the job I'm in today, the purpose is there. And it's not just the purpose of providing health care to an individual. It's up a couple of levels in that it's facilitating a system and processes that that provide health care to populations. Healthcare to our population, which really is another purpose, or adds to the purpose, because you know it's our families and it's our extended family in the form of our Army. So, I've been lucky that I am in an occupation and always in a place where I haven't gotten to a point where that purpose has left me.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you mentioned that we're going to talk balance and in a minute, but you know, you mentioned about family and those around us, and I remember in one of the professional military educations I went through, we had to write a paper on incentives for soldiers. And right, one of it was, is there a difference between why soldiers join, why soldiers go to war, and why soldiers stay in the Army or in the military? And I think a lot of it boiled down to the social groups, you know, and I can't help but think that what does a support network look like for you throughout your years and many experiences that you had? What's that support network look like, both from just coincidental, but also maybe there was some deliberate architecture that you built around you?
So I am a significant advantage over most people in that I'm married to a person who is incredible. So when you talk about support, certainly family is huge.
Yeah.
My wife, we've been married for 34 years. Essentially, we have grown up together and we're mutually supportive,
right,
and understand each other. Not only that, she's been a part of everything that I have done as during my time, not just in the Army, but elsewhere.
Yeah.
She is as much a member of the Army as I am. We have four children. We've lived all over the world, and she's been there. And she's been there in a supportive manner. She's worked as able. She teaches kindergarten and other things. When we get to certain areas, she's worked probably about half the time. So I realized that what I just described was what the Army was under the 1950s model.
Okay.
I really have. Because that's one of the challenges we face. The 1950s model doesn't work anymore
right,
in the Army.
Right,
and that's
right.
That's one of the reasons we see more GO bachelors. We see more of the challenges that we face right now was that 1950s model. But I've also found support in the team that I'm a part of. Mm. You know, nowhere have I been in my Army where I did not have a team. I was not part of a team. And not just not part of a team, but part of a team that we all were bound by the same purpose strategically.
Sure.
You know, we all kind of raised our hand and said, we'll do what needs to be done. But a team that, for the most part, has a shared morality, a shared sense of purpose, a shared sense of and I could throw the Army values out there, but the biggest is the willingness to support outside themselves, you know, with the focus not being on necessarily me as an individual, but us as the team. So that's been probably the most significant aspects of that support, that structure. And and of course I'm kind of biased because I've had that.
Right.
But and family and a spouse and so forth, whether it's friends or spouse, often they're there, but for some people it isn't. But what I hope our team doesn't miss, especially for those who are listening that are part of the military, you are surrounded by a team. You go nowhere in our organization where you are not part of a team that has a larger effort beyond what you just bring to the game. Now, there are some who may, I'm a recruiter in a remote area. You may be in a remote area, but you are still part of a larger team. And sometimes we miss that. So the structure is there to support. Often, as individuals, we, as the leaders, aren't fostering an environment that, for whatever reason, is doing that for the individual. But often, we're not leading those individuals to the purpose that we can find.
Right.
Or that we have found, I should say. So.
Yeah, well, and I hope our listeners didn't miss something that you said, great things, and I noticed some things that you didn't say, because you were talking about, you know, this idea of shared purpose and this idea of, you know, people being around you, and that you've had really no burnout because of all these things, but you've been a leader your entire career. And so you are facilitating a lot of that culture. And I want to give you some credit for that, sir. That's amazing. And I'm curious, maybe what is, if I'm a leader right now listening to the podcast, and maybe I'm having a little trouble. Maybe I had, you know, as you mentioned, a community climate survey a couple months ago that, you know, I've got to work on some things about fostering that purpose, maybe reducing burnout. What are some things that you've done at the head of the table, metaphorically speaking, that to invest in your other leaders or your people around you that kind of help to build that culture?
So I'll give you a few things on this one. The first is being present, knowing your team, and communicating, helping guide people to the purpose, helping them find the purpose, helping them understand you're not just Garrett Holt in uniform today doing your job. You're part of something much larger, whether it's a healthcare team that's in support of a clinic, in support of a hospital, in support of a garrison, in support of the United States Army, DOD, and ultimately in support of our nation. Mm. It's huge. Mm-hmm. So if you can lead them there, that's extremely helpful. The other thing that that early in my career I found to be extremely helpful, and I tell this to all of those who are leaders, is you got to take the drama out of what we day-to-day activities.
Right.
Okay. We can be passionate about what we do, but often the emotion rises to a level of drama, which limits our ability to see things rationally and to think rationally. So as leaders, we have the amazing gift to buffer those we lead from some of the drama that we're surrounded by. We really do. Sometimes it's easier to do than others, but I think every leader's heard that you set the tone of the organization. A leader sets the tone of the organization. That's one of the ways a leader sets the tone of their organization. They're present, and then they consciously control and influence the environment, and not just the physical environment, but the emotional environment, the sense of safety, the sense of mutual support for their organization. And that goes both ways. Drama starts at the front lines and comes up. If it gets to leadership, all the drama gets taken out of it, because if you don't, then it's going to significantly bias your ability to make the decisions that you need to. And then if you don't take it out early, then it will spread across the organization. And then it also comes from above. As I said, you can, to a certain degree, protect your organization.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of things that happen at our higher headquarters from Congress down that can be dramatic. I don't know if you've realized this.
A little bit here and there.
Because until you work inside the Beltway or in the D.C. Yeah. area, there are things that are decisions that are made based on factors that drive them that at the tactical level, those factors make absolutely no sense. Mm. But at the strategic level, especially in the world of the political and in the world of just immense competing requirement, those decisions make sense. So, and sometimes that's easy to just get your people to the why, so the drama is dispelled there. Sometimes it's not.
Right.
So,
right.
It stops at you, and it's buffered, and it's, this is what we've been asked to do, and we're going to do it and move forward.
And it's tough. I know I experienced that in every position, is learning new ways to articulate in just a very fact-driven way what's the reality that you're at battle, at odds, if you will, with the reality that they are living every day at the front lines, and, you know, trying to figure out a way, how do I reach them where they're at? I know it's been challenging, and I learn new ways every day to do it myself. So we're closing in on a little time. I did want to touch quickly on balance and how you kind of define it maybe, and how you unpackage it, and then we'll kind of close out our time. So any thoughts on balance?
Yeah, because we throw balance around a lot.
Yeah.
Like work-life balance. Do you have work-life balance? Do you achieve? Are you achieving work-life balance? And yeah. Every time I go somewhere, I ask folks, so tell me about your work-life balance. Maybe about 20% of the folks that I ask, it'll go, oh, I got great work-life balance. And then I'll ask them why, and they'll go through. And usually it's they perceive that their spouse or their children are happy. What I've found through my career is there is no work-life balance. Now, what does that mean? I didn't just spoil everything, and people are having to start, you know, their SSRIs to prevent the depression.
They're pulling to the side of the road now.
It's like, oh, my gosh. Did he really say there's no work-life balance? There's not work-life balance in the sense that, oh, yeah, I'm getting there. At best, work-life balance is about conscious decisions on where and how you're going to spend your time, involving those who have equity in your time in those decisions, and then the willingness to live with the near and long-term outcomes of your decision. Now, that's a lot, but ultimately, it's about this is where I'm going to, you got to actively make the decision. And that's where a lot of people go wrong. It's not an active decision. You're at work, you get stuck at work, and you're just at work.
Yeah.
You don't consciously go, okay, I'm going to stay here.
Right.
The longer you stay, the longer you stay. That's what we used to tell each other when I was Captain Rainey.
Okay.
Because we did.
Yeah.
But it has to be a decision.
Yeah.
You can't passively go through life and not make decisions about in the moment, because often that's how it happens.
Sure.
Because you really do get caught up in something and make a decision. And then when you can, especially those balanced decisions or decisions that contribute to balance that are intermediate term. For example, the decision to say, okay, Army wants to send me here. It's better for my career. I'm going to PCS. There, I'm going to leave the family here for stabilization. That's a decision. First, it should be a decision and it should involve all of those who have equity in where and how you spend your time. So that's family, that's children, or what, spouses, children, et cetera. And then others as well. And, you know, those at work have equity in how you spend your time. And if you're going to make a decision, make sure you understand the consequences and the impact of that decision. And how do you know if you achieved work-life balance? That's a hard one.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Well, here's my thoughts.
Yeah.
Because I'm a bit older now. And so the long-term outcome, you could say, when your kids get older, they don't hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little late to assess and make adjustments on there.
Yep, yep.
Are you still married? That's the other one. If you were married before, okay. Did you, you know, et cetera. Then there's the ultimate measure. Did you achieve a work-life balance? And I, you know, as you get older, I've read about this and I have begun to experience it. There's something called the witching hour.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever heard of the witching hour.
Not in this context.
The witching hour, usually it's around anywhere from 2 to 4 a.m.
Okay.
And it's when you wake up and your mind is going. And for whatever reason, something comes up about an event in your past or what you've done. And usually it's something that didn't go quite the way you wanted it to be. Or it's something in the current time frame that's bugging you. And then as you think about it, you trace back those events that led up to what's happening today.
Right.
And if you have regret when you do that, probably didn't have good work-life balance, because work-life balance, you thought about it, you're willing to live with the consequences.
Okay.
I'll tell you, in my experience, I'll think about it and then I'll go, well, that was the way it was. That was my decision. And I will move forward from here. And then I count to 100 and usually I'll go back to sleep.
Oh, that's good.
But, you know, that's kind of the end point.
Yeah.
But early on, the way you know is you ask at work, because that's when you start to learn about what the near-term consequences. So leaders should be very honest in the feedback they give. And then you've got to be comfortable with your decision. Yeah, same thing. You ask on the other hand, because often it's family versus work. That's the balance that people kind of always ask about. You talk to the family, and that's not just the spouse. That's the children, and sometimes that's extended family, especially as you have kids and their investment in grandkids and so forth. So you understand that, and maybe if you didn't make that decision right the first time, then you at least have greater insight into the consequences the second time you do that.
Okay.
The great thing about life is if you're thinking about it, there's an opportunity to change. If you're not thinking about it and your brain's not working anymore, life's over and you're done. So,
right.
But if you actually have the ability to think about it, you can adjust and make tomorrow better.
Yeah.
You're still probably at some point going to have to work through the pain that you feel intermittently from the past. But there's always time to adjust if you can recognize that you need to adjust. Hey, one more thing I wanted to say, because this is the other, there's two more things that that help me deal with the chaos, you know, because every day can seem to be chaos, but you know, for the most part, it's not. So first, the assumption should always be that everybody's trying to do the right thing. And if you start there, no matter how egregious the event seems to be that's being described to you in a first report, then that's gonna keep your mind clear to make a unbiased decision when further detail comes in.
Mm.
And often, you know, first reports are almost always wrong.
Right.
So that's the baseline. Because I found in life the majority of the time that's the case.
Okay.
The second is that high school never ends.
Okay, you got me now.
high school never ends. So what does that mean? The same insecurities, the same personalities, the same idiosyncrasies that we exhibited in high school persist into adulthood.
Okay.
They persist.
Right.
You know, you can, and this is a great example, you can go to your 30-year reunion from high school.
Right.
And when you go around and you talk to the people that you hadn't seen in 30 years, they look the same. They act the same. It's as if you never left. Yes. That's on the surface.
Yes.
So that's on the surface.
Yeah.
Well, the same is true often of who we are, our personality, our strengths, our weaknesses. Over time, we get better at highlighting our strengths, de-emphasizing and mitigating our weaknesses, but they're often still there. And sometimes those mitigation strategies fall completely apart when you get stressed and things around you start to fall apart. Those weaknesses come out. So that's the other piece. If you accept that up front, then you realize what you think should be adult behavior coming from someone, but it's not. Well, it's just behavior, because often we're the same people we were in high school. And if you start there, then you get past the first piece of the frustration, which is how in the world are you like this?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. That's the way you are. And usually it's driven by some kind of external circumstance that's pushing you one way versus the other. Okay. Then the ability to deal and work with that individual is much less painful and often more successful. Yeah, that's high school never ends.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Embrace that one. And that's from the most senior levels on our planet down.
Well, I'm immediately running through the Rolodex of experiences of different times where things have been challenging in a relationship, both professional or personal, or you know what, or even very successful, and just thinking back. In fact, I just talked to a high school friend of mine just the other day, and I was like, it was via text, you know, so it wasn't like voice, but you could definitely tell like our behaviors were just coming out. I mean, from decades ago, it's just crazy. But to see that translate into the area work lives and our professional careers and then our adult lives as we navigate through not just our professions, but parenthood and marriage as well. Definitely can see the corollary there. Well, we are drawing close towards the end of our time, sir. I do want to give you another opportunity if you have anything else in terms of how does a leader kind of, you know, maintain a healthy lifestyle, establish balance, or really anything else that you have, any other gems that you might have for us.
Jim, you don't have to go to the gym to have a healthy lifestyle. Okay. Throw that one out there. Just, well, I know that's not what you meant. But that's the other thing. And this is something I've had the opportunity to do my entire career. There are opportunities to remain active outside of an hour of PT every morning.
Okay.
So yeah. Whether it's I take the stairs or I park my car, or I didn't even drive my car. I walk to work or drive your bike to work or do something that incorporates activity into your daily routine. We have a tendency, especially as we get older, to spend more times on our can in the jobs that we do in front of a computer. I think we all live that at times, and we're much less active. Well, you can find places to regain that activity. Mm. So you just got to look for it.
Yeah.
And then once that becomes routine, you've added significant activity back into your day. So that's a big piece of it. And then if you don't enjoy what you're doing, maybe you should stop doing it.
Mm.
You get one opportunity in this world.
Mm.
And if you get up and you go to work every day and you don't enjoy it, then you're in the wrong place.
Mm.
And that can be place actual, or that can be place a bit more virtual.
Sure.
Outside of physical.
Yeah.
So you need to do something about it. It goes back to, you know, decisions. We can passively trudge through life unhappy, or we can recognize that we're unhappy and we can do something about it.
Yeah, that's great. I love this common theme because it nests right inside of this idea of just kind of always being ready to change. And I've heard you mention earlier on about ideas of adjusting what you're doing and changing directions and you know, recognizing where you're at and really helping to describe reality and then adjusting what you do today, day to day, to make things different. So I want to thank you for all that content. A ton to unpack it here. I hope our listeners were taking notes, and if not, listen to the podcast again. But really, really honored to have you on the part of that. Appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time on your busy travel schedule to come over and talk with us, sir. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here, sir. And for the listeners, we hope that you're tuning in. If this is your first time, again, I encourage you to go back and listen to some of the other podcasts and some of the other content. We work really hard to bring you stuff that's relevant and relatable to you, something that's interesting to you. And so we really appreciate you listening in, and certainly. Make sure to tune in the next month. We're struggling with exactly which podcast we need to do for next month. In fact, there might be multiple. We'll see. We have so much content that we're ready to release to you and really dive into. So make sure that you continue to stick with us as listeners. And as always, for the entire community and to all of our listeners, remember that your healthiest chapter is ahead and that the only way is forward.
The Lister Health Talks podcast is produced by the Lister Army Health Clinic Public Affairs Office at Fort Novosel. Catch our next episode as we focus on the Exceptional Family Member Program and preparing for your next change of duty station. Stay healthy, Fort Novosel.